Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Jesus told his disciples a parable. Can a blind person lead a blind person? Will not both of them fall into a pit? No disciple is superior to the teacher, but when fully trained, every disciple will be like his teacher. Why do you notice the splinter in your brother's eye, but do not perceive the wooden beam in your own? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me remove that splinter from your eye," when you do not even notice the wooden beam in your own eye? You hypocrite. Remove the wooden beam from your eye first, and then you will see clearly to remove the splinter from your brother's eye. A good tree does not bear rotten fruit, nor does a rotten tree bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its fruit. For people do not pick figs from thorn bushes, nor do they gather grapes from brambles. A good person, out of the store of goodness in his heart, produces good. But an evil person, out of the store of evil, produces evil. For from the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks. The Gospel of the Lord. What a delightful selection of readings we have before us today. How rich they are. And they certainly continue the theme that we reflected on last week. You remember? The core question, love your enemies. And where is the enemy? Who is the enemy? Is the enemy within or is the enemy without? Huh? Within, perhaps, and maybe not totally, not absolute either way. But a great deal of the enemy may be indeed within, and I perceive it or I project it out there. It's that person. If it weren't for that person, or if it weren't for that group, but it really may be the issues within. And that's why I asked you to look at the size of your screen, not your television screen. That's an easy one. Your personal life screen. In other words, how do you evaluate and assess life? Am I inclined to take insult by the actions of others? And then I decide, they're the enemy. People do not decide, as we said last week, to be my enemy. Nobody decides to be my enemy. I decide who the enemy is. So maybe it reigns within. And I hope you had an opportunity during the course of the week to check on your screen size. Is my screen size large enough for the wonders that my God is trying to teach me and guide me in? Do I need a larger screen? A larger and better way of seeing and evaluating life? Or is mine just a little petty? The readings this week, they're a great complement to the theme. The theme of our Lenten study, and you know what it is? Respectable sins. The sins we tend to tolerate in our lives rather easily, and indeed can have habitually just accepted these sins in our lives. There are many of them. And each week during our small group study, we will be reflecting on either two or three of those sins. The great and wonderful thing about our study is this, that it's an invitation to become aware of those sins that I take for granted or that I tolerate in my life. We can begin a new process during the Lenten season by challenging those behaviors, those sins, not overlooking them any longer or being blind to them, but actually availing of the opportunity to change my behavior, my attitudes, to improve myself. If a sin is causing me difficulty in my life, For example, if anger is a sin in my life and I do nothing about changing that, I can generate a whole lot of distress for people around me. Would I not want to change that behavior? And I think one of the illusions that we have as Catholics is that we have the sacrament of reconciliation, and so I go and I confess to the sin of anger in my life and that I was disproportionately angry about some particular thing with my family, with my co-workers. And then we have this sense, I think, that, well, that's it, I'm done, I'm forgiven now. But that's not true. I have taken care of the vertical part of relationship. I've done nothing about the horizontal, the experience of relationship with those people that I might have damaged a very significant relationship. And what happens is rather amazing. You know, if nobody gives me that information and is helpful enough to me and says, you know, you might have a little problem with anger. What's underneath it? How am I ever going to find a new approach? And what happens is it becomes kind of acceptable. And maybe we fall into a malaise, and even some people will say, well, you know, that's just the way I am. And sometimes they might add on, deal with it. Now, that's a great piece of speech because you're telling me a whole ton about yourself. Deal with it. There's a better life available. That's the story of the gospel. And our readings today are pretty special as they prepare us for the Lenten season. The first reading from the book of Sirach. You familiar with the book of Sirach? Good. A number of people have said to me over the years, I can't find it in my Bible. There are two reasons that you may not find it in your, one of two reasons that you may not find it in your Bible. Number one, it's in the older Bibles, my beautiful Jerusalem Bible from seminary. The book is called the Book of Ecclesiasticus. To distinguish it from the Book of Ecclesiastes. And it's named under the author's name, Ben Sirach, the author of the book, a teacher in Palestine. And it was written about 190, so a later period in the Christian development. And his concern was that from the Greek experience, which was essentially a pagan experience with multiple gods being worshipped, he was concerned about the pagan influence that was seeping into the Christian life, particularly among much of the higher class people in Greece. And so he began to write this, and it's wisdom literature. The other reason you may not find it in your Bible is because it happens to be one of the seven books that are contained in the Catholic Bible and are not in all of the other Bibles. They are called the Apocryphal books, and there are seven of them, and this is one of them. Another interesting detail is that this is the book that is most quoted from in Catholic liturgy from one end of the year to the other. This is the book we quote most, besides the Psalms. Psalms would be number one, and the second most used book in Catholic liturgy is Sirach. Listen to what he says. Very simple household item, and in the household we use it a lot for a number of good things. There are all sorts of sieves available to sift out what we don't want, what we don't need. It's a very good example. We had a member of our parish here from my home county who was a representative for PowerScreen. They're in Northern Ireland. They make huge industrial screens for building companies. Huge, huge items. He has moved away since, but there are all sorts of screens. Here's what the author says. When a sieve is shaken, the husks appear. Now listen to what he says. So do one's faults when one speaks. Amazingly true. Think about it. People tell me a great deal that they never intended to tell me by the observations they make. It happens to you too. You find a lot of information that was never necessarily intended, but my speech provides that information. People might tell you a bit about the size of their screen, how they view life. Not intentionally, but when it's shaken out, that's what you are seeing. As a test of what the potter molds is in the furnace, so in tribulation is the test of the just. In other words, we find experiences that are very trying and challenging. How does God appear in those realities? And the author is saying, the just, people who are really committed to growing in relationship with him, they manage to make their way through these things just as the work of the potter, the molds, are tested in the furnace with fire. And then they come out well. And they're only going to be produced, provided they pass that litmus test. The fruit of a tree shows the care it has had. What a beautiful thought. I've had a lot of care and a lot of nurturing and a lot of education in my growing up. Does it show in the reality? How broad is my perspective? How broad is my screen? The fruit of a tree shows the care it has had. So too does one's speech disclose the bent of one's mind. It's a beautiful perspective. One's speech discloses the bent of their minds. You may not see it all, and if you're not paying attention to it, you may not even notice it. But it's a great truth. Praise no one before he speaks, for it is then that people are tested. Pay attention to the speech of people. If somebody struggles with gossip, be pretty assured, hey, you might be the subject the next trip. It's just true. Wow, it's a beautiful reflection. What I speak about tells a lot about who I am as a person, where my heart really is. That's what the author is saying. When I disclose in speech a lot of things about myself or about others, there's a great self-revelation. As a test, many people might say, okay, I'm checking my speech and I'm checking my behavior. And many people would say, well, I'm okay. You know, I don't commit any of the big sins. I might be guilty of a little gossip or a little slanderous talk about some other people, but it's really not that bad. Is that true? Well, it's really not that bad. But here's the real kicker. People will often say to you, well, everything I said was true. I told no lie, and I have it from a reliable source. Isn't that good? And so I duly absolve myself. I say, well, no, it's kind of known out there. Everybody knows it. Is that the issue? Is that bringing good news? Much bigger issue than can I absolve myself from my chatter or my sins of the mouth? Much bigger question is, do I trust that he absolves me? If I go ahead and do nothing else about it, and I come back and do the same thing again and again and again, do I trust that he really is reconciling me? Is it reflective of a growing and healthy relationship with my Lord and Savior? It's a much bigger question. And so you can see how easily we take it for granted. I absolve myself. But as Lee Corso likes to say in his sports programs, not so fast, my friend. There's a lot more to it. As I said, one of the issues might be our struggle with the sacrament of reconciliation. It's not just a matter of the vertical, my relationship with God. It's a matter of how is that being lived out in experience of my relationship with others. What the author in Sirach is really saying is that God sees the heart. He sees and hears everything I do, and even things that I plan that I don't do and don't execute. Ah, man, that's tough. He does. We know that from our youth. God knows and sees everything. I don't know that we taught it that well along the way because we generated so much fear about it. But it's a good thing for me to be aware of. God sees the designs of the heart. The fruit of a tree shows the care it has had. How have you cared for your tree? So too does one's speech disclose the bent of one's mind. What can I say? And here's the rub. The gospel picks up exactly the same theme. The gospel puts it in very clear language. A good tree does not bear rotten fruit. A rotten tree does not bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its fruit. For people do not pick figs from thorn bushes, nor do they pick grapes from brambles. A good person out of the store of goodness in his heart produces good, and an evil person produces evil. For from the fullness of the heart, here's the kicker. This is the master himself. For from the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks. You see the relationship? How is my speech? Maybe you would reflect on that this week. What does my speech tell about me? What is the fruit that I'm bearing, or what is the fruit that I really want to bear in my life? Do I want to be more fruitful? Do I want rich and luscious fruit? Or do I tolerate any kind of old fruit? It's a great thought. This week, the two sins that we are reflecting on, ungodliness and unthankfulness. Ungodliness, many of us, when we hear it, we would think, oh, that's evangelical preachers, right? Or the ones we hear on television, the televangelists, talking about ungodliness. We don't hear that too much in Catholic circles or Catholic preaching or teaching. But we do. We do. Something we've talked about here quite a bit, ungodliness. The truth is, it is something that we deal a great deal with in Catholic tradition. By ungodliness, we mean, are we sufficiently attentive to the role of God in my personal life? What are the ways that I do not really engage God and that I live independently of the reality of him being my creator? So, for example, I've often asked you, how aware of you are God in the daily mundane tasks of your life? Does God enter in? Or is it something that I deal with in the morning and I have my prayers and I say, okay, now I'm off, and then maybe I'll catch up with you in the evening? It's a very worthwhile thought for growing Christians. The sin of ungodliness is pretty far-ranging. It goes from giving some serious thought to God in my day to giving absolutely zero thought. It's kind of on a continuum. And the invitation is to look, where am I at on that continuum? How much thought and reverence do I give to my Creator during the course of my day? For example, you know, in my work activities, in my engagements with other people, in my family, how much thought do I give to being godly, sharing what God is inviting me to do and to be? Let me give you an example. St. Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, was a pretty intense individual. And he had very strict rules. He took most all of those Benedictine rules in the forming of his community because they were in place for hundreds of years before. And then he had the rules for priests and for religious. To read the liturgy of the church. So you had morning prayer, you had midday prayer, you had evening prayer and night prayer. And then he had one addition. It was called the Examen, which is an integral part of the Jesuit tradition. The Examen was essentially an examination of conscience for all of the friars and priests and the members of the community at the end of the day. And St. Ignatius Loyola said, brothers, you can skip any one of the hours, but you can't skip the Examen. It is so important to examine at the end of the day how I have done in terms of my response to God. Now, we as Catholics have been good at the Examen. We do a lot of examination of conscience. What does it mean? It means that I look and find the faults. Man, bombed out here, bombed out here. And if we have a checklist, you say, yeah, yeah, yeah. But really, that's not the most helpful. 200 years later or more, George Ashenbrenner, one of the great confreres from the Jesuit community, came up with a whole new concept. He said, instead of an examination of conscience, why don't we look at an examination of consciousness? In other words, how conscious was I of God? Not how many times did I fail? Not how many sins did I commit? But rather, how conscious am I as a growing Christian of his abiding presence and his care for me? So he said it would go something like this. In the morning, when I get up and I brush my teeth and I'm doing my morning offering, because I've done it all the time. Is God present? And when I get in my car and I drive down through the traffic, now that's a good one. Is God with me? Is God present? Am I aware of his presence with me? What is he teaching me about all the struggles that I might encounter in traffic, right? And my struggle with patience. Am I aware of him? And then I make it eventually, after some challenges, to my workplace. Am I aware of God and his presence to me in my relationship with these people? And then I have this big meeting. It's a very important meeting about our future and our growth and development. And so we gather around the conference room table with these important people who are going to bring this to fruition. Am I aware of God? Am I aware of his presence? And then I move on through lunch and my relationships and other people I engage in. And when I'm visiting this person in the hospital, is it me or am I aware of him? And then I move on and come on home and make my way through traffic and become kind of exhausted throughout the day. And I come to my family. Am I aware of God and his presence in me and in my family? And then George Ashenbrenner had a marvelous reflection. He said, it's easy to do this examination of consciousness. You simply say to yourself, throughout my day, when I got up this morning, was it I or we? And then I went to work, was it I or we? And then I engaged in this meeting, was it I or we? And at lunchtime, I met with these people, was it I or we? What a beautiful thought. Maybe that's how we should be looking at it. Not to find our fault, but rather to find, and that's what ungodliness is about. And unthankfulness is certainly a very close parallel to it. How grateful am I for his abundance in my life already? And not so obsessed with, well, I don't have this, or I would rather have this, or any other thoughts. I remembered when we were in seminary, we put together a little prayer booklet, favorite prayers that individuals had chose from all of the different classes, not classes of people, but, you know, first year, second year, third year, you know, that one. And people submitted prayer, and I submitted this one. I thought it was a great prayer that I found at that time. And it says, I got up early one morning and rushed right into the day. I had so much to accomplish, I didn't have time to pray. Problems just tumbled upon me and heavier grew each task. I wondered why God didn't help me. He answered, you didn't ask. I wanted to see joy and beauty, but the day toiled on gray and bleak. I wondered why God didn't show me. He answered, you didn't seek. I tried to come into God's presence. I used all my keys at the lock. God gently and lovingly chided. My friend, you didn't knock. I woke up early this morning and paused before entering the day. I had so much to accomplish. I just had to take time to pray.